Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday.
You just killed me.
What happened? Oh, it is Saturday, the 1st of June, Anno Domini 2013, and you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Linda Wildman, filling in for that guy, Dave Enright.
That guy. It's June. Everybody, June in Rochester, New York. Very exciting. And probably around the world, too. We're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. I cannot believe it takes 20 freaking minutes to start up
a hangout
thing. I'm getting a little tired of it. It's like, and now it's going to ask me one more thing. Okay, you're starting. You haven't started now. It's preparing, but it's not starting. I hate this. Okay. All right, let me start with the news. It'll be 20 minutes now before that actually begins. After 10 years, developers of Camino, the Mac-only browser built atop Mozilla's Gecko engine, called it quits Thursday. Camino is no longer being developed, and we encourage all users to upgrade to a more modern browser, stated a message on the open source browser's website. Camino is increasingly lagging behind the fast pace of today's changes on the web, and more importantly, it is not receiving security updates, making it increasingly unsafe to use. Camino debuted in March 2003, but goes back a year earlier when its forerunner Chimera was released. The last update, Camino 2.1.2, was issued in March 2012. Camino's developers pointed Mac users toward other choices, including Google's Chrome, Mozilla's Firefox, and Apple Safari. But Camino served a special function. It was one of the few browsers that ran on older editions of OS X and worked on Macs equipped with PowerPC processors, precursors to the Intel CPUs that are now in all current Macs. Hey, look at that. Finally. Oh, no.
One more question.
And it hasn't begun posting yet, so no, it's not actually working yet and not ready to go. God, I love Hangouts. Mozilla, for example, retired Firefox for OS 10.4, a.k.a. Tiger, in 2010. And the last version of Firefox that ran on a PowerPC was 3.6.28, which shipped in March of 2012. Firefox 21 is the current version of Mozilla's browser. Nor do the newest versions of Chrome or Safari support PowerPC Max or OS 10.10.5 Leopard and earlier. According to internet measurement company NetApplications, nearly 8% of all Macs that went online in April relied on Leopard or an even older edition of OS 10. Mayskia.
Yep. People still running 95. And, well, see, XP is 12 years old.
Yeah.
But kicking and screaming into the 21st century, but it's 12 years old.
One replacement for Camino is 10.4 Fox, another browser built with Mozilla's code, but it's been fine-tuned for PowerPC Max running Tiger or Leopard. 10.4 Fox currently stands at version 17, is functionally equivalent to Firefox 17, which shipped last November. The demise of Camino makes Apple Safari the second oldest remaining browser. Safari debuted in January 2003, more than a year before Firefox 1, and 5 years before Chrome. Microsoft's Internet Explorer, introduced in 1995 and working correctly in 2007, is the world's oldest still-produced browser with just 2 years to go before celebrating its 20th birthday. 20 years of Internet Explorer.
Ooh.
So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Camino is no longer being produced. The choices are, oh no, I've been too lazy and or cheap to update my Mac OS since 2007. Seriously, was Camino still around? Who cares? I don't use a Mac. And wait, Macs can get on the internet? So far, Wow. Okay. So far we have... I have to actually pick a poll choice. So far, I don't like this poll as much. 33 votes. Most of you don't use a Mac. And of course, if you have more to say, our forum topic this week is 1 June 2013. Camino is no longer being produced. So, are you still using Camino? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. And if you call us, we will be happy to talk to you, just like we're about to do to Henry from Brighton. Hi, Henry, what's up?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I've been running AVG free version. This is the 2013 edition, and I wanted to replace it with Avast. So I went into, I have Revo uninstaller on my machine, and I went in there and looked for the AVG, and it's not listed. And I guess I could use the AVG uninstaller, but I prefer to use a Revo because it tends to be more thorough in uninstalling. Why can't I see it under Revo?
Did you install Revo before you installed AVG?
I believe what I had previously had AVG 2012, then I put Revo on, and then I upgraded to the AVG 2013. Again, this is the
free. AVG is being an antivirus program. One of the first things it does is hides itself from everybody else, so it can't be easily uninstalled. I mean, obviously, the idea is if it made itself easy to uninstall, antiviruses, rather, would uninstall it.
Yeah, yeah. So there is an uninstall utility within AVG. I should just go ahead and use that then.
Yep. Okay. Sorry.
All right.
Yeah, that's probably, probably the safest thing you can do is use their own uninstaller. You could look in the Windows Ad Remove programs to see if it's listed there, but...
Their own should
be best.
Can I ask you another question? We have. I'm wondering Windows 7 on a PC, what I like to do is when I run things like my antivirus program or malware anti malware bytes or other types of programs like that, I try to do them at night, so it doesn't interfere with my work during the day. But can you put the computer to sleep and then have it wake up to run these, you know, the antivirus and the anti malware bytes, and then have it go back to sleep again, or do you have to have the computer active all night long in order for these programs to download their updates and run themselves?
There are programs that will wake up the machine if it's... Now, the problem is if the machine is off, those programs aren't running. So that's not likely going to happen.
But if it's asleep, there is wake on LAN.
Yeah.
So the network card can wake up the computer if there's an incoming
network.
If you've
turned that on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, if you've actually turned the machine off, then
it's not off. It's asleep. It's not turned off. You have selections within the control panel to set the machine to either hibernate, sleep, or even they have something called hybrid sleep.
And then other issue is that desktops don't handle sleep very well. Well, they sleep fine. They just don't wake up very well.
Is this a desktop or a laptop?
I actually have both, but right now I'm dealing with my desktop.
Desktops don't sleep well. You really shouldn't put them to sleep, ever. You should either let them run or turn them off.
Well, is there a way to at least reduce the load on the hard drive so it doesn't wear itself out?
Some systems have an option for hard drive sleep, independent of screen sleep and computer sleep.
Okay. All right. but I think I have to go into the BIOS screen to do that. Am I correct?
Yes. If that's where you've set it up, then yes.
I see.
There are two places that you can set that sort of thing up. Mm-hmm. One is in the BIOS, and the other is in Windows itself. So, honestly, it depends on which you've done.
Okay. And you should only do one. You shouldn't set the sleep settings in both places.
Sure.
It looks like, I'm Googling around, it looks like there are a few programs that you can download that will wake your computer from sleep on a schedule.
Okay.
I don't know how much I'd trust them, though. So, well, like even Windows does its Windows Update check at 3 a.m. is the default time.
Right.
So they assume your computer's on all night, which isn't good for the environment.
Yeah, right. Yeah. By the way, for... I have read that I've read varying reviews about Windows Essentials, as something to use as an antivirus program. And then I've heard more recently that it's not quite so good.
It used to be pretty good. It's falling a little behind, and we kind of see that with all the AV suites. That they'll come out with one version that's really really good, and then another company will come out with one, you know, release their update that makes it better, and then the other company makes theirs better, and so it's a continual leapfrogging of each program.
What's number one on your list right now?
AVG or Avast are the two big ones that I like.
I mean, I don't care whether it's free or not, but you're saying...
AVG or Avast.
Yeah. Avast, okay. All right. And these would be the paid versions, I presume.
Either one are very good. The nice thing about the paid versions is they have some additional automations and a couple of extra bits and pieces, but even the basic free one is pretty doggone good.
Okay.
And it does look like the Windows Task Scheduler built into Windows, because that's a Windows 7 ribbon bar, right? That...
Certainly not Windows 8.
It's not. Yeah. So that's and it's not XP. So that's got to be Windows 7. The picture I'll post in a minute. The Windows 7 Task Scheduler does have a wake up option. So
okay.
if the computer is asleep, it will wake up. You can schedule it to wake up and do something.
Okay, I'll look at that.
So I will post this in our link list.
Perfect.
Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you. Bye bye. So, yeah, it's, I actually didn't, I've never even looked at that about the Windows Task Schedule. If they have a thing that wakes up a sleeping machine, again, you shouldn't sleep a desktop. Sleeping a laptop is fine. In fact, that's magnificent. But sleeping a desktop is a bad idea.
Some desktops can handle it, but not that many.
Not that many, and you would need to actually know. All right, our next caller is Jim from Greece, New York. Welcome, Jim. What's your question?
Well, good afternoon, gentlemen. I have a HP Pavilion laptop, a year and a half old, run Windows 7 on it, and I keep it updated. I did an update about a week and a half ago, which was their super critical security updates, and everything went fine. And about 3 days later, when I went to turn the laptop on, everything booted normally to my login screen where I have two logins. One is administrator and one is a regular user. And I clicked the administrator tab, entered my password, it started churning, and then everything went black and up come the command prompt window with an error message that gave me a file name and said is not recognized as an internal or external command, operable program, or batch file. And I got the prompt, and everything's black.
Okay.
What is that file name?
Well, the file name is 572BBD, as in David, 55.exe. So I Googled everything at work, and I found that a lot of Google notes talk about corrupted paths when the system is loading, and that the file itself could be one of any number of things, but it's the fact that the path has gotten corrupted.
Well, that file doesn't sound like a legitimate Windows file.
What it sounds,
no, it doesn't.
What it sounds like is that you've gotten some sort of almost working rootkit. Can you log in under your regular user?
I can, yes.
Yep. What it sounds like is you've got some sort of rootkit that tried to take hold and was not successful. Your best bet is to take your machine to a reputable dealer and have them check it for rootkits. Unfortunately, you cannot check a machine for rootkits on that machine. The
right.
whole point behind rootkits is that they hide themselves before the operating system loads. That's why they're called rootkits. So you have to take the drive out, put it in another machine, and test it that way. That's kind of a fiddly problem, because if you do it just slightly wrong, you'll now infect the other machine.
Right.
So that's why I always suggest you take it to a reputable vendor and have them do it. So that would be my suggestion, and I don't think that...
unless you have two machines and you're comfortable with ripping them apart.
Yeah, if you're that kind of geek, then go for it, but... the average user, my suggestion is take it to a reputable dealer.
Yeah, I'll do that. I'm comfortable with tearing the machines apart, but, you know, the laptop has never been apart, and I really don't want to learn on it. I'd rather learn on something that I didn't hear about.
Believe me when I tell you that's perfectly fair. All right, we have to take a break.
Thank you.
Mo, thank you. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Linda Wildman, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 20 minutes after the hour. You continue to listen to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Linda Wildman.
And at 23 minutes after the hour.
Sorry about that.
She was trying to give you a little more music.
Right. We are Soundbites. We have, David from Canandaigua on the line. He'll be here in just a moment.
I'm here.
There you are. What can we do for you?
Well, I got a couple little questions. I got one of my PCs runs Windows XP. It's a few years old. It's got an older motherboard. The machine locks up intermittently. Can't a control alt delete won't do it. You got to literally shut the power off. And I was hunting around for diagnostic software, and I was wondering if you guys had any good suggestions on that. Most of that stuff just tries to clear out all junk out of the registry. This is a hardware issue.
Generally speaking. Hardware diagnostics are proprietary to the manufacturer of the hardware.
And often come either on a hidden partition with the computer or on a separate disk.
Oh, I built this machine myself.
Well, two things you can do. One is to check with the manufacturer of the motherboard.
Right, okay.
Right, because that would
and that's what makes it tricky, is each component will have its own diagnostic tool.
Yeah.
And you said it powers itself off?
No, it just locks up.
Oh.
No mouse, no keyboard. Still displays, but it's just locked up.
Yeah. Okay, there are a couple of tools. Microsoft has a hardware tool.
Okay.
Actually, hwinfo.exe, which we'll tell you a little bit about in a little bit.
Right.
It's certainly better than a sharp stick in the eye. But there's a program. Yeah, I don't even know how many of these still exist anymore.
Yeah, I found a 2010 article from Lifehacker on the best hardware diagnostics.
Yep.
Generally speaking, with hardware diagnostics, you just replace components until you find what's wrong. So the easiest thing to start with is RAM. So replace one or both of the RAM cards.
Uh-huh.
That's sort of where you get stuck. Try a different hard drive with a fresh OS install.
Yeah,
and then remove something called component isolation that we talk about in hardware diagnostics. Remove everything you can from the computer, If there's separate video cards or separate audio cards, anything like that, and isolate it to just the motherboard, the CPU, and power it on and see, you should at least get into BIOS screens, and then add a hard drive with an OS on it, then slowly add your components back one by one.
Well, for the time and trouble, I might just as well go buy another low-end motherboard and RAM set. And
I would start with the RAM, because that's the cheapest and easiest. If you have more than one RAM card,
you won't have to reinstall Windows if you replace RAM.
Right.
If you have more than one RAM card, take one of them out, see if the problem occurs, and then put that one in, take the other one out, and see if the problem occurs.
Yep. But if this machine is, you know, X number of years old, it could be any component in the box.
Right. Right.
I remember I looked into RAM diagnostic boxes, and they're like $5,000. Because there's so many different kinds of RAM, you have to have so many different slots on them.
Right, I did see, there's some, like it's a PCI card that plugs into the machine independent of the system and all that. But, yeah, I'm just looking for, there used to be a lot of stuff like that, but I guess things have changed.
Well, and it's so custom to each type of hardware thing that you're testing.
Right.
Each brand of motherboard and sometimes each model of motherboard would have so many different components in it.
Now,
test your BIOS. There might be a diagnostic for the motherboard in BIOS.
Right.
Right. If you're just looking for a generic memory test, there's memtest86 at memtest86.com.
Gotcha.
And you can download that, put it on I think they still call it a bootable floppy, but you can put it on a CD
USB
or whatever.
Drive
USB drive, whatever, and run it from there. But the reality is that it's a million components. It's an old machine.
Right.
You could end up replacing every single part before you figure out what the problem is.
Right. And since it's part of my business, maybe I should just replace it. I don't have the time to play with it.
I would suggest that if it's for your business, then you really desperately need to just replace it.
And it's always good to have a backup computer anyway.
Right.
So get your business up and running on a new computer.
Right.
And then you can tinker with the old one.
This is actually real-time control for a piece of machinery. So one other little question. I've been reading around on newer motherboards. There's an MSATA.
Micro SATA. It's a tinier connector than the standard SATA we're used to.
Okay, just another thing to make things not fit together.
I've been seeing it mostly in ultrabooks and really tiny laptops where space is a premium. And now, if you remember the old 40-pin IDE connector and how huge that was, and then the SATA connector is so tiny, and now we need an even tinier one?
Right.
Well, if we're eventually going to be wearing our computers, then everything will be Bluetooth by then.
Right. Well, that's enough for now. Thank you.
Okay, good
Thank
luck,
you.
David.
Yep, thanks.
We see that kind of often. I get it. Nobody wants to spend money they don't have. And you get used to what you got. I really do get that. But there comes a point
if
at which
works,
you kind of have
it.
To say, it's time to move on.
Yep. And we see that a lot in our repair business, that people are wanting to repair their old computers longer. And people bring in, 10, 12-year-old computers, and I want to fix it. Well, it's not worth it, and I probably can't find parts for it anyway.
Well, and that's the big thing. You know, what David was talking about was replacing the motherboard, which means he may need a new power supply.
Right.
He may need different connectors for the hard drive, which means the hard drive.
New CPU slots.
Right. So by the time he's done with that, just get a new case, get all the pieces and parts, and be done.
We actually, in our shop, we pretty much stopped custom building PCs because you build one, and then next month you want to build another one for another customer, and all the stuff you bought last month is gone. And so you can't build the same computer anymore. And then you have to work trying to figure out what parts all work together. Dave's got a great story that he's told about the customer who bought the editor's choice of every single piece of a computer, and none of it would work together.
Yep.
And so, buying an inexpensive name brand PC, you don't have to get a super cheap discount box store PC. But name brand PC will give you tech support to talk to, and it reasonably priced and reasonably well built. And you don't really save that much money anymore, but you don't have the tinkering ability. And so that's where Linux is coming in. Use your old computer to tinker with and throw Linux on it.
Right. All right, our next caller is apparently not Joe from Greece. It's Joe from Greece. Welcome, Joe.
I wonder if you can help me out. I'm running XP with Roadrunner, and I think I made a mistake a couple of weeks ago. Moving around, I looked on safety, and I noticed the delete browser history, which I do every week anyways through the Explorer. But I clicked that on, and guess what? A couple of days later, it didn't remember my password or my login name.
Right.
And I've been going crazy. I've got that in front of me again, and it's got a red X, and it's got a green arrow going back. If I click it on, will that put me back to where I was?
Nothing will put you back where you were.
Unfortunately, when you delete browser history, there's a whole bunch of additional stuff you can also delete. XP didn't give you as many choices as a newer operating system would, so it made some choices for you, and one of them is things like cookies and things that it remembered. So
save passwords, website data, things like that.
Right, so you will have to put those in again.
Okay, then if I do it, it'll bring me back to a point where if I put it in there and say remember, it'll remember me, because I don't want to have to go put my whole name and the password every time I go in.
Well, yes, it should remember you again now. But if you delete browser history the same way you did it last time, it will forget it again.
Okay, so with the green arrow going back means it should be put me back before, it should take it out what's stopping me from remembering my password.
What program are you in that's giving you a green arrow?
Yes, the green arrow is going backwards towards the
right, but what program are you in? We don't know what green arrow you mean.
The green arrow next to delete browser history.
In what program? Internet Explorer, Firefox?
Internet Explorer.
Yeah, and none this is the one you've always used?
Sorry, I'm having a problem hearing.
Joe, I can't hear you.
Yeah, none of us use Internet Explorer.
Here's the thing, Joe. If you don't want anybody to know where you're browsing, then you need to pick up a modern browser like Chrome and run it in incognito mode, where it doesn't save any of your history or any of that stuff. But if you're going to keep deleting your browser history on a very old browser, it is also going to delete some of that information that you wanted to keep. There's no way around that, because that's just the way they were built back then.
Okay.
Okay,
thank you.
Yep.
Bye.
I have no.
Yeah, there's so many different little things that your browser keeps track of. The website history, your cookies, shopping cart lists. If you go to shopping cart programs, forum lists. You go to the forum, Soundbites forums to read messages. It remembers the last message you read, so it can show you unread messages. And a lot of that stuff is stored in your browser data, and sometimes it calls it browser cache, sometimes it's browser history, sometimes it's autofill, sometimes it's there's so many different little things. On Safari, you get a whole bunch of 8 or 10 different things you can clear individually with the modern version of Safari, and Chrome and Firefox give you similar options for deleting individual things separately. And so it's likely his older Internet Explorer on the older XP isn't doing that.
Right. That's exactly right. We often see that, as time has gone on, the programs we run have gotten more and more sophisticated. That's a good thing. But it also means that if you're still running one of those old programs, it's not so sophisticated.
Yep. And there's sort of an interesting catch-22. It's convenient for the browser to remember your username and password. It's convenient to you. But convenience is always the enemy of security. That means anyone else who happens to sit down at your computer can, say, log into your Amazon account and order things on your credit card and then ship it to their address if they want.
Nice.
Yeah. So it's generally speaking, if you're on a laptop, don't have it save your passwords, because laptops are more commonly ported to other places where other people might get a handle on it. Or even we've been seeing issues at home with kids. There's been a big issue in the iPad world where you type in your password to buy a program, even you're buying a program for your kid, and it doesn't ask for the password again for a few minutes.
15, I think.
15 minutes. Yeah, it used to be longer. They've dropped it to 15 minutes. And so you buy a program for your kid, and then you hand the iPad to them, and they've got 15 minutes to run up your credit card bill. So when you buy something, log out of your account. Or what we recommend in the iPad is don't put a credit card on your account. Put a gift card, $10, $15 gift card. So if they do buy something, they can't run up a multi-$1,000 bill like we've seen people do.
Right.
So what about a phone? You have the same issue on a phone? Cell phone?
Yeah. If you've logged in to buy something on your phone, and then you give that phone to someone else, you may well still be logged in.
And even it's not as bad as it used to be, but cell phone minutes. You used to pay by the minute, and you had a local rate and a long-distance rate. That was always the big thing. Don't make long-distance calls because it's going to cost. But if you lend to someone your phone, they're going to be using your minute plan if they're making voice calls, and they're going to be using your data plan if they're looking on the web. So it's fortunately, most people have their own phone now, and you don't have to loan phones out. But
right.
Yeah, if you log into your browser on your phone, someone can pick up that phone, or like a library or public bookstore, coffee shop, things like that. Someone can sit down at that computer after you leave and hit the back arrow in the browser and go back to the website you were on. Fortunately, most of the big shopping sites like Amazon will ask for your password again. But there are ways that someone could accidentally get back into your account, or just even if you're reading your email, someone hits the back arrow and they can see the email you read and send email as you. So if you're ever using a public computer, quit the browser when you leave. Not just close the window, quit the browser completely, and that usually closes the sessions and prevents people from doing that.
Or again, if you have a browser that has it, go into the incognito mode.
Yep. Private browsing, Apple calls it.
Whatever they call it.
We jokingly call it porn mode.
Yeah. Yeah, I was kind of hoping to slide past that, but I don't know what I was thinking. I knew it would come up because who's sitting to my right here? Oh, wait, it's Steve Ray. So, yes. But yes, it happens. I was discussing, or speaking of porn, I was... There's a segue for you. I was talking to a friend of mine earlier about how Yahoo wants to buy Tumblr.
Mm-hmm.
And he was saying, why would they buy it? And I said, well, it is the biggest porn site on the web. And he was surprised to hear that.
Yeah.
But it's true.
There's been a couple of interesting issues in the news recently.
I'm told.
picture websites. What is it? 500 Picks. And Vine, there's been several picture websites intended to share pictures that people now start sharing porn pictures. In fact, Google just had a problem with one.
There is a company, an adult entertainment company, that is now planning on making adult entertainment movies using Google Glass.
Yep. And so when you buy these apps in the different app stores for the different tablets... a seemingly innocuous app like a picture viewer has to come with an NC-17 rating because you theoretically could see dirty pictures.
Right. All right, we're going to take a break while you all go to Tumblr. Back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Linda Wildman, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 40 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Linda Wildman.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. The former Union of Soviet Socialist Republics gained some internet status in 1990 by being awarded its own top-level domain. A year later, the USSR was no more, but its domain lived on to the delight of cyber criminals. Over the last 2 years, the USSR's domain, .su, has seen a spurt in registrations, many of them by miscreants, pushing scams and malware, according to cybersecurity company Group IB. In 2011, Group IB said the number of malicious websites hosted by the SU domain doubled from the previous year. In 2012, it doubled again, vaulting over a number of other malicious sites hosted by another favorite domain of cybercriminals, .ru, as well as its Cyrillic counterpart. Sites in the SU domain can be particularly harmful because they may distribute malware, typically Trojan sites, which are designed to pilfer personal information used for identity theft and to compromise bank accounts from the machines they infect. Cyber bandits aren't drawn to domains like SU out of any sense of nostalgia for bygone times. They know that in SU there is weaker enforcement of rules that would interfere with their operations. Most of the .su sites were created for malicious purposes, not for business. More Trojan sites are hosted on .su than phishing sites. The .ru domain, the country domain for Russia, has been a favorite of information highwaymen in the past, but in recent times, the administrators of that domain have tightened things up. That, too, may be making .su more attractive to cyber criminals. Another country code recently abused by internet riffraff is .pw, which used to belong to the tiny Pacific nation of Palau. The domain, which is now owned by a company called Directi, make up your own pronunciation, has become a favorite of spammers. Directi tried pumping up a popularity of the top-level domain by selling domain names based on it at rock-bottom prices. The tactic made .pw popular, but not the best class of net denizens. At the end of April, a huge spike in internet spam occurred containing URLs with a .pw domain. During that period, almost 50% of all spam URLs contained that domain. Cyber criminals are very opportunistic. They only care about their business. We call them criminals, but this is what they do for a living. They're businessmen. It's not a hobby. So, do you carefully check domains before you randomly click on things in your email? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
And a lot of times these domains are small countries that generate a lot of money from it.
Tuvalu.
Yeah, .tv. .fm, the Federated States of Micronesia. A lot of FM radio stations use that. .am, which is actually Armenia.
Right.
.ly is used a lot. The Bitly URL shortener services. And that's Libya. We don't quite know if we like that or not.
.le.
Yeah.
Google is using that one.
Yeah. So let me zip down here. What is LLE? That's IE. IE is Ireland. JKL, LA, LB, LC. There's no LE.
Yeah. Goo.gol. Oh, maybe it's GL.
GL. GL is Greece.
Yeah,
no, Greenland. No, yeah, GL is Greenland.
Greenland.
Yeah.
Greenland is a dreadful place, yeah. A land that's never green. Where there's ice and there's snow, and the whale fishies go, and daylight seldom seen, my boys. Daylight seldom seen. I could sing that for you if you like. It's an old whaling song.
For old whales?
For old whales. For old whalers, actually.
Sorry. So, yeah, there's a lot of these two-character domains. And then when the bad guys put together something, average people are so used to .com and maybe .edu and .org. So they'll do paypal.com.ru or paypal.com, you know, .co.
Right.
And you won't notice that extra little bit at the end. You'll see, oh, paypal.com, that's fine. No, it's paypal.com.ru, and that's bad.
Which means there's a domain called com at ru.
Right.
com.ru, and they've created a subdomain called PayPal.
So
they must be making money hand over fist.
Yeah. So it tricks you into thinking you're at PayPal, and you put in your PayPal credentials, and suddenly they've got access to your PayPal account and can
Right, because when you
stuff.
Go to that website, it looks exactly like PayPal. Which is not hard to do, because PayPal is sending you all the data you need to recreate their page on your screen. That's how that works.
Now, I think in this case, yes. Okay, so now, in that specific case, paypal.com.ru is really PayPal in the Russian language. So they were able to buy this domain that bad guys were using, and now it's really the right domain. Because it takes me to paypal.com/RU, and I have my green identity
validation.
So
what they're doing is redirecting you back to real PayPal,
right.
Only in Russian.
And so a lot of big companies will do that. They will buy the misspellings of their own name or the fake accounts of their own name. PayPal gets hit a lot because they're so big and there's so much money there. PAYPA1.
Yep.
That you don't notice is a 1, not an L.
Yep.
And so it's very easy for the bad guys to go to the real PayPal.com and start pulling graphics and icons.
There was somebody who was sending out spam to Microsoft with a 0 instead of an O.
Yep.
For the last S.
I got one this morning from AppleStrat.com. They had typoed Apple Store. Now, I don't know if that was an on-purpose typo to make people think it was Apple Store, or if they wanted it to be Apple Store, because there was another domain in the middle there, with a file saying your order needs to be approved or something like that.
I've gotten lots and lots of things from Amazon and from PayPal recently. Saying your order has been shipped if you disagree, and your credit card has been charged $150, $250, $350. If you disagree with this charge, click here.
Yep.
Well, if you disagree with the charge, open up your real PayPal in your real browser and look at what's been charged to you. Wait, you won't see that charge there. It's not real.
Yep. And it's getting to be more and more important these days to not wait till the end of the month to check your bank statements. My wife kind of, I don't know what the right word is. She finds it humorous that I check my bank account statement virtually every day.
Sure.
To make sure there's nothing bad in there. No, nobody got my credit card. Nobody's buying things. And she's annoyed that I keep asking her for her receipts so I can make sure that the charges I do see are real. Don't wait till the end of the month and just pay the bill. That's what the bad guys are counting on.
Right. I log in regularly to the extent where I was out of town for a couple of weeks, and I didn't check it. And I actually got a message from my bank saying, you're having problems logging into our web portal? Here's how you do it. Blah, 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 blah. But I thought, wow.
That was nice of it.
That was nice of them. But yeah, I do it fairly regularly. I've also gotten that exact same message leading me to somewhere in RU, by the way.
Yeah.
Are you having trouble logging onto your account? Well, no, I don't have an account at that bank, so really there's no trouble. Thanks anyway. But I get that message all the time. People who say, is this legitimate? My response is always, do you have an account there? No. Then, no. No means no.
We've had quite a few customers get caught lately by some of the job search websites. Well, you post your resume on a job search site, and I can't think of any of them offhand. But
Monster, Dice.
Yeah. Career Builder. They're big, well-known targets. And so the bad guys will use that as a return address. Oh, we got your resume at, insert name here, and we have a job for you. Click this link and fill out some information for us. Social Security number, credit card numbers, yeah. Very upsetting.
Yeah, and why would they need that information? That should be taken by the employer.
Right. Well, they're claiming to be the employer. We got your resume, we have a job for you.
Okay.
Because people aren't looking at the from easy enough.
Right, they're not looking at the from.
It is incredibly easy to fake the from. Don't ever trust the from.
Yeah, read the full headers and you can see where it really came from. Not enough people do that. Obviously, most email clients make it real easy to not look at the whole header because there's a lot of confusing information there. But it's good to be able to get to it when you need to. And there's a whole set of tricks that we should all use to not have to worry about these things, to be able to check and see what's going on for real before we get there. And it's as easy as when you get an email or when you go to a web page, I want you to click somewhere else. Hover your mouse over, point the mouse to it, but don't click to the link. And you will usually see either a pop-up or down in one of the corners the actual link to which you are going. If it doesn't match, it's a trap. But we don't do that enough because we're always in a hurry, and it's too much work. We're lazy, and then, oh, my God, I got caught by a virus. What do I do? Well, it doesn't matter what you do because you're going to do it again tomorrow.
I've been getting a lot of junk mail from Russian women offering to be my friend. including pitchers. And it comes in increasing frequency. different patterns that for a while there's a lot of junk mail coming claiming to be from PayPal, and then a lot of it will become claiming to be from this other person or this other person. And
well, that's what you get for going to the Russian PayPal site.
Yeah,
true. Yeah, actually, now that I've done that here, I'll start getting more stuff in Russian.
I will say there was a while when I was ridiculously popular on Facebook. Lovely, lovely young women, or yep, at least people purporting to be lovely, lovely young women, every single day wanted to, you know, I was getting 10, literally 10, 15, 20 of these things every single day of these people wanting to be my friend. No, no, no. Thank you. Not that I don't love lovely young women and I'm happy to be their friends, but I suspect most of these are people living somewhere in Russia who look a lot more like me than they do like the picture that they sent me. So I just, no.
That's how you keep warm in those long Russian winters.
There comes a point where keeping warm is more important. I get that. I understand that.
See, there used to be a lot of these
We've run out of vodka. Now what?
Yeah. There used to be a lot of these same scams in the olden days. They've gone through postal scams where you get a letter claiming to be this, that, and the other thing. And that's moved on to the internet. I guess before that, what was it? The Travelers, wasn't that an old... People would go around asking if you needed handyman work done, you know, back in the 1800s, and they'd take your money and then never do the job. So these, you know, scams have been out for thousands of years. They're just getting more sophisticated and more common and harder to stop because the internet is global. Most of this stuff coming to you is outside of the country, probably even right off the continent.
Right. But even back then, I mean, we had our. A couple of years ago, we had our driveway redone, and I said, we got to really do this. And I said, I'll call some company. She said, no, there's a guy at Market who does this. I said, do you know this guy? She said, he buys coffee from us. She said, that's not really a ringing endorsement. She said, no, it'll be fine. Okay, whatever. The guy did a magnificent job. I mean, an absolutely magnificent job. But that's the kind of story that puts hope into everybody else who are hiring these fly-by-night, I don't know who these people are, where did they come from, they make coffee from me, companies.
I've seen...
The guy did a... I want to say, he did an astonishingly wonderful job. Our driveway in the entire 20-plus years we've owned this house never, ever looked better. Ever.
And home handyman are a big scam.
30 years we've owned this house.
Problem. That's where Angie's List started coming from to get recommendation. Our neighbors were doing their driveway once, and the guy came over to me and said, "You know, I got some extra, you know, asphalt left. You know, we can do yours too. How much? $1,000? Nah, I don't want to do that. $800? Nah, that's too much. $300? No.
Yeah, been there.
Well, partly because they have to use it or it's lost. But then I got thinking. What about these guys that just fill up their can, their asphalt machine every morning and just start driving around? Hey, well, I can do your driveway for you.
I think that was this guy. But it didn't matter because he did an amazingly wonderful job. Now, I also get, speaking of scams, I get a lot of people who tell me that I'm owed money back. That I can reduce my mortgage rate. They have checked my mortgage rate and they can reduce it for me. Since I paid my house off approximately 15 years ago, my assumption is they are going to simply give me money every month.
Yep.
That's the only way they can reduce my mortgage payment. But I have.
There are companies that do reverse mortgages.
Yeah. I don't want a reverse mortgage. I just don't even have a mortgage. I'm happy to not have a mortgage. Perfectly happy. We had a mortgage burning party.
Nice.
I remember the day that we got, you get those tickets in the mail that you have to pay every month. And I got this, the one and the last one, and I didn't realize it was the last one. And so I started screaming and yelling to my wife how they'd screwed up again and blah, there are only two tickets in here and what the hell are we supposed to do with this? And I have to call them up on Monday morning. Blah, 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 blah. I said, honey, it's the last two payments. Ooh, so, talk about your roller coaster ride. All right, we're going to take a quick break. You've wasted an hour of your life listening to us, but good news, you can do it again, because we're going to just take a short break while you listen to the joy that is our underwriters, and then we will be back with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. I'm Nick Francesco with Steve Ray and Linda Wildman. You know, every time one of us is not here, it screws up my rhythm. But we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. If you haven't called in, I don't know why you haven't. And if you have called in, hold on. We'll be with you in just a second. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
Linda Wildman.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Larry from Rochester on the line. Welcome, Larry. What's up?
Hello. Well, I have the same problem that you had with Facebook and getting lots of girlfriends.
It's tough to be this sexy, isn't it?
Yeah. Outside of telling everybody that I'm not single anymore... Is there any other ideas that might stop it? Or
no, because I'm listed as married on Facebook, and it doesn't seem to stop them.
Okay.
Basically, what you can do is what I do is I just report them as spammers. I honestly don't think Facebook cares.
Yeah.
Because that person has a Facebook account, and that counts toward their billion accounts that we can tout.
Yeah, actually, the recent ones all seem to be brand new. Like, we just joined this morning, and we want you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, right.
There's unfortunately nothing that can do about it. I wish there were.
I do have another little bigger issue.
Yes.
You need to update your Flash player. Go here.
There are lots of fake Flash updates.
I know that.
Because
I know they're fake.
Yeah, Adobe, who actually makes Flash, updates it so often that the bad guys make fake updates.
Yeah, I know. They're popping up, every 15 minutes.
Well, yes, and you're using Internet Explorer.
Nope.
What are you using?
I switched between Google, Chrome, and Firefox.
Huh. I don't know what to tell you. I don't think I've seen one of those. Maybe I'm running an extension, the Kill Flash extension.
Yeah, there are extensions that just stop Flash from playing completely.
But they shouldn't stop pop-ups from...
Yeah.
Unless they're Flash pop-ups.
Yeah, I've got to go back and... Actually, pops up. It does it to me both on... Mostly I'm on Chrome, but I think it does to me on Firefox, too.
Well, yeah,
Chrome's got its own Flash, which confuses issues all the time anyway.
And Chrome updates it itself, so you should never see a message in Chrome.
Right.
That's legitimate.
Yeah. One of the things that I do in Chrome is I've run the Better Pop-Up Blocker.
Okay.
Which is surprisingly, a pop-up blocker.
Yep. Okay.
Wow, brilliant of me. I am a brilliant guy. I don't care what anybody says. It's called Better Pop-Up Blocker, and it works great. I don't see pop-ups anymore, ever actually.
Okay, I'll see if it gets to that one. I have a feeling this thing is hiding something in.
Well, that was going to be my next suggestion, which is to dance the security tango.
Oh, I'm in the middle of that. So.
There you go.
Okay.
But that's really the best we can tell you. Sorry.
Okay. I had a feeling, but figured.
Yeah. And then a lot of I'm seeing a lot of legitimate ads, but also some fake ones, too. They pop under.
Yep.
So that's how they get past your pop-up blocker. They're not pop-ups.
Right. They're pop under. One of the things that's nice about blocking Flash entirely... is there are a lot of ads and stuff I don't see. One thing that annoys the living heck out of me, one of many, many things, get off my lawn, is when you go to a website and it just immediately starts playing a video. The sad thing is there is no button I can push to reach through the screen and strangle the person who put that on their website.
Okay, and most of those are running off flash?
Some of them. So okay. Some of them I've stopped seeing.
Okay.
Others, I'm not sure what they have, but I have to deal with that.
So I can disable that, and then I'll get that yellow bar at the top saying, your flash isn't working.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah.
No kidding.
And a lot of people have started removing Flash completely, and because the web has moved on to other standards as well, H.264 and CSS. So we're seeing websites not doing much Flash anymore because the tablets don't support Flash. Apple never did, and the Android version of Flash never worked well, and Adobe discontinued it. So the web companies are doing better things now instead of using Flash. So a lot of times you can go without using Flash at all.
Okay, I'll go over and disable both versions in case one of them got it enabled again.
Right.
Okay.
All right, good luck.
Thanks for help. Have a blessed day.
You too.
Hey, thanks.
It is a problem. Flash was never a good protocol. It just never was. Unfortunately...
It was good enough.
It was good. It's exactly right. Unfortunately, it was good enough. And so when it was the only thing there was, we were all thrilled to use it.
It was one of the first, what became called Web 2.0, where before that you had animated GIFs. And that was cool.
Yeah, it really
and
was.
And the web was suddenly full of animated GIFs. And did you hear the guy that invented GIF said, yes, it's GIF.
Yeah.
With a soft G. But then...
And you know why that is? Choosy users choose GIF.
So when animated GIFs gave away to Flash, where you could actually do real animated programming and interaction, we started seeing a lot of Flash games. And actually, that's where Flash still has a stronghold, is in the Flash game websites that still do everything with Flash games.
Or pretty much any freaking game you would ever play on Facebook, I'm told. I don't play games on Facebook.
Many of those are starting to use HTML5 and CSS. There's a lot of really cool example pages people have put together showing off what you can do in HTML5. Google has a great HTML5 page.
Did you see Roll It?
No.
Roll It. I think it's rollit.com, I think.
A Chrome experiment?
Yes. It's a skee ball thing. And you control the ball with your smartphone or your iPad or tablet or whatever you want to use it with. And so now you control it by tipping and flipping and all the things that you're now doing with a Wii controller and Kinect, you're now doing via the web with your smartphone or your it's unbelievable at how well it works. I was playing it at work for about 4 minutes the other day is really, I'm sure, all I was on. But it isn't that skee ball is so much fun, although I love skee ball, but simply the way it actually just works. My smartphone, my screen, boom, 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 and I'm playing the game. It was unbelievable. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark. From Greece, New York. Welcome, Mark. What's your question?
Hi, guys. How are you?
Peachy, how are you?
I'm good. More of a comment than a question.
Yes.
I'm using Avast and the free antivirus.
Yep.
And a really cool feature that I like is their software updater. I don't know if you guys knew about it, but they have a software updater in there, and it tracks Adobe and Foxit and Google Chrome and Internet Explorer, Java and Firefox and VLC, and it'll tell you when there's an update available, and you click on the update button, and it brings you to the page to download the update from that, you know. And I've had really good luck with that.
Yeah, it's an excellent product.
Mozilla.
Because I've had a few problems with Adobe, you know, pop up saying there's an update, and then I'll go and I'll check in the software updater, and I'll rescan, and it'll say I'm up to date, and it'll be weeks sometimes before there's an update that's true.
Well, there's a discrepancy between when the vulnerability is found and when it's fixed. So Mozilla has a similar website where they check your web plugins, mozilla.com/plugin check.
You're right, I use that quite frequently.
Yeah, it will say your Flash is vulnerable, and you click on get the Flash update, and you are running the latest version. Well, that doesn't mean it isn't vulnerable. It is vulnerable, there just is no fix yet.
Right, and this tracks when there's an actual update, a legitimate update.
Yep. That is nice. Yeah, Avast has become quite the product. It
yeah,
does
I
way
think
more
I'm
than...
going to start paying for this because
exactly.
It's so cool.
Exactly. You should. It's a terrific piece of software.
Well, that was it. I was just, you know, wanted to see if you guys knew about it, and I think it's a great way. If you need an antivirus, this feature's great. It's worked great for me now. For months I've been using this, and
yep.
I think it's wonderful.
And it's well worth paying for, isn't it?
No, I think I'm going to, yeah.
Good for you.
Yep.
Good for you. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you.
Yeah, as I've said 100 million times on this show, when I put the Security Tango together, I gave it all the... I point you at all the free software. But I encourage everyone who could afford it to upgrade to the paid version because that encourages the people who make this stuff to make it better. So that makes me happy when they come out with new products. You know, and on the other hand, we're always talking about how I'm delighted that some competitor has come out with something because now prices will go down for all of us, which
yeah.
I realize is counterintuitive in terms of that stuff. But it is what it is. And
we always wonder how people that write free software can earn a living. And it's usually they do it on their own time. They have a day job where they it's usually coding, but they have a day job where they earn their money. And that also kind of makes me, well, there's the open source community, the free and open source, the FOSS community,
right,
where everything should be open source and everything should be free. Somebody's got to get paid for it somewhere along the way.
Yes and no. The pay doesn't have to be dollars, however.
Yeah.
For many people, what the pay for them is knowing that they've fixed something that they
yep.
find so useful, becoming part of the community, getting their name in the list
yep.
of contributors. For some people, it's monetary, but for other people, mm-hmm. it's we've scratched an itch.
Well, let's see. Well, yeah.
I don't like this feature, so I'll fix it.
Yep. And that's kind of where money came from originally. You know, if I wanted bread, I would trade my you know, what I made. Well, I make jewelry, so I'll give you a piece of jewelry, you give me bread. It was so much easier to have that money in the middle to set values for things. But
well, it was easier to carry around coins than
yep.
it was to carry around cows.
Yep.
Really is how that happened. Unless you were Captain Kangaroo, you didn't have pockets, or I suppose the doctor, you didn't have pockets big enough.
Yep. Out at Valentown in Victor, they have the old Valentown Grange Museum.
Yep.
And they talk about that's how things were done back then, and the grocery store, everyone had their chits, where you went and got flour, and you left a chit that you got flour. So when
that's
you
CHIT.
Right. Well, I got to make sure I enunciate.
I want to enunciate.
And then so at the when your crop came in, you know, you cashed in all your chits and paid for your stuff. And
right.
And at the Grange was where everyone went to, you know, the corn and wheat and whatever, everybody's different crops and beef and everyone settled up and the grocer got paid.
Right.
And then the grocer had to buy his stock from somebody up the line. And so for hundreds of years, that's pretty much how things worked. Everyone contributed their own economy.
And that economy still exists because
yeah.
we still have like the Rochester Trade Exchange.
Right.
You know, we still do that today. Or we, you know, we do that, well, you cut my lawn, I'll plow your driveway.
Yeah.
So that happens. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Ray from Rochester, New York. Hi, Ray, what's up?
Speaking of Avast, I've been using Avast now for quite a while, and suddenly I've noticed when I open up my Thunderbird, I get these pop-ups about certificates for pop.googlemail.com 995, and sometimes I can't get rid of that. You say get certificate, you say cancel. The thing won't go away, and I actually have to shut off the email scan in Avast to get around that. So what is am I doing wrong in this situation?
You're trying to cancel.
I'm trying to cancel, but I could also hit get certificate or whatever, and it won't do anything.
What has happened recently is that Google has gone to always on security, SSL encryption. And in order to check your mail, your mail program has to have a certificate. And so now for your antivirus to check your mail, it needs a secure certificate too. Now, are you sure the URL you're getting is pop.googlemail.com? Because that's not the right URL for Google's mail.
Well, that's what I'm getting. It says pop.googlemail.com:995.
So 995 is the secure IMAP service. So if you're getting something that says pop and trying to use the IMAP port, that's not good.
Okay, because then it says something about, it gives me another thing like, well, banks and legitimate sources will never ask for this and so on.
Yeah, they'll all put that in there.
Sometimes, like I say get certificate and it goes away. Other times the thing sits there, you can't cancel it, you can't do anything, and I can't even turn off Thunderbird. I have to go into the Avast and shut off the email scanner and then get rid of everything. And that's what I'm not sure why that just started coming up probably about a week or so ago.
It makes us think you're infected by something that's trying to put a fake security message in from a close but not accurate URL.
Okay.
Are you using Gmail with POP3 or with...
Are you using Gmail, period? We should start there.
Yes, I have my Thunderbird set up to go out to our... We got two different Gmail accounts. I got one and my wife's got one. So I got those set up, so instead of just logging on to the Gmail website, I can just, bring them in through there.
Okay. And are you using POP or IMAP?
That I'd have to check. Yeah. I'm not sure. Whatever got set up.
The correct address is pop.gmail.com.
Okay.
And generally speaking, POP downloads the mail to your computer and then deletes it from the server. It's much more common to use IMAP, which is imap.gmail.com. That way all the mail stays on the server, and you can read it on any of your devices, and the other devices know. So if you're using POP and check the mail on your laptop, when then say you go to your desktop and check the mail, those same messages you already deleted will show up again because there's no synchronization with POP between computers.
Actually, when I'm looking at the Gmail that my wife uses says pop.gmail.com, but the other one that I'm using actually says pop.googlemail.com.
Well, let me get around all of this anyway. Do you use any email service other than Gmail?
Well, we've got our main one that's through Roadrunner.
Okay.
And we got our old one, which still comes through once in a while from FrontierNet, for whatever reason, even though we got out of there a long time ago.
Well, if you can, you can forward everything to Gmail. And the reason I suggest doing that is because Google scans your mail anyway.
Okay.
And therefore, you can turn off the email scanning in Avast, which saves overhead, and sometimes if your machine is slow, it can be timing problems. I've even heard of people losing email, but very rarely, very, very rarely. But let me suggest that the easiest thing to do in this particular case would be to move on, to forward all your mail to Gmail and turn off email scanning in Avast.
Okay.
Okie doke.
Thank you very much.
We have to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Linda Wildman, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 20 minutes after the hour, sound bites on the truly great member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
Linda Wildman filling in for Dave Enright.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And
I want to add a slight clarification. Google used to use googlemail.com as their domain. So that is a valid Google Mail domain. And apparently Germany still uses that as their default domain. But virtually everyone else uses gmail.com as the domain.
So one thing Ray might do is change from Google Mail, go back into Thunderbird and change the setting from googlemail.com to gmail.com, see if that solves the problem.
Yep. Actually, that may be the problem. The certificate is from gmail.com, and his website is asking, or his email program is asking for googlemail.com.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, Ray, if you're still listening, and why wouldn't you be, try that. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Steve from Henrietta, New York. Welcome, Steve. What's up?
Yeah, hi. I think you've addressed this before. I have an iPad, and I'm wondering if I need a virus software, and what's a good one?
Generally speaking, you should have antivirus software running, just in case. There haven't currently been any iPad viruses. There have been programs that have done malicious things, and as soon as Apple catches them, they get removed from the App Store. One of the problems is that the way the iPad works, every program is sandboxed from every other program. So it's difficult for an antivirus program to run because antivirus programs live in the background and they look at every program that runs. So at the moment, there are, if you go into the App Store, you can search for antivirus programs. There are programs from Lookout that check for suspicious activity on your network because networking is a system level thing. And there are quite a few programs for doing things like that. Avast, when we were talking about Avast before, Avast has one that lets you create VPNs so that you have an encrypted tunnel back to your home computer. So there are some security programs available for the iPad, and it's not a bad idea to run them just to be a good network citizen so you don't happen to pass along anything.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Sure. Thanks. Yeah, and for you Android people, there are two that I like. Lookout has been around for a while and has lots of amazing features. AVG also has a version for Android that I've been using recently. It seems to be fine. But I also like Lookout for a lot of the other things that it does, and it's not terribly expensive if you decide to go the full stuff route that it does. One of the things it'll do is back up your machine. And it will also allow you to find your machine. It'll tell you where it is, and it also set it to start screaming. So that's pretty neat. I have, used that, not myself, but I have talked to people who have used the Find My Phone feature of Lookout, and it works really nicely.
Yep. And that's one of the neat features that's built into to the iOS, too. So yep. if you leave it behind somewhere, you can figure out where you left it. Or if it does get stolen, you can help track it down.
Right.
Help the police track it down. Never a good idea to track down a thief yourself.
No, very bad idea in point of fact. But if you have the choice, call the police and let them do the hard work while you sit back and just retrieve your stuff, assuming that you get it back.
One of the problems is that police are being overwhelmed by stolen iPhones. What's the definition? It's petty theft because an individual phone doesn't cost that much.
Well, I thought petty theft was $500. So the real cost of the phone is above that, but nobody pays the real cost.
But what often happens is it's an organized theft ring where someone steals the phone and they all get gathered together, and that becomes, grand theft, moving up into larceny, all the different legal definitions. And I remember reading a few years ago a story about a guy that had a tried to buy a laptop on eBay, and an empty box with rocks came, so it weighed something, right? And the police didn't care because it was only $1,000. And it came from Chicago, and so the guy's blogging all this, and so people living in the Chicago area went to the address it shipped from to take a look at it, and it turned out it was actually in one of the suburbs, and so he ended up calling the police station in Waukegan, and the chief of police in this little town said, "Oh, great, I just bought a UPS uniform. Let's set up a sting." And they netted this multi-million dollar theft ring.
Nice.
Because the local cop would do something that, you know, the big city police wouldn't bother doing because it was just one little laptop.
Nice. Nice. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Joe from Cheek.
Tawaga.
Ah, Joe. How are you, Joe? What's up?
Well, you were telling me the last time I called about how, wow, you wait that long? Anyhow.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just think POP3 is a horrible protocol. I don't know why that caller isn't using IMAP to begin with, but be that as it may.
It's what we all were used to using ages ago. When you dialed into the internet, downloaded all the mail you could, and hung up the phone as fast as you could because you paid by the minute, that's what we needed POP for.
Oh, heck yes. Oh, gosh. I was a CompuServe subscriber.
There you go.
I remember, yeah, you had this many minutes a month free, and if you wanted to do PPP access, yeah, that was charged separately.
Well, and also don't forget, it used to be that disk space was $1,000 a meg, so they didn't want your mail hanging around on their servers.
Yep.
Now that it's like a penny a gig, they don't care.
Yeah, my Gmail's capacity of 10 gig, of which I'm probably using 1 meg.
Yep. And so...
Well, and was it Flickr just gave everyone a terabyte of disk space?
Yep.
Because they know very few people will actually use a terabyte.
Right. But yeah, so back in the day, POP3 was important. Now, not so much. And as Steve said earlier, IMAP is much more important now because you want to be able to check the same mail on multiple devices, and the only way you can do that is with IMAP.
And have it remember what you've done.
The best way you can do that is with IMAP.
With between your phone, your tablet, your computer, desktop, laptop, you might have four devices checking for mail. And if you read and delete a message on one device, you don't want to have to see it on the other ones.
Right.
But on the other side of that, we're running into a lot of problems with customers with Gmail and Yahoo Mail that are getting connection errors. And then they'll also be getting password failure errors where it says your password is wrong and type it in again. I think what's happening is so many people are connecting on so many devices so often, people set their computer to check every 5 minutes for new mail, that it's overwhelming the servers.
Most of you are not that popular.
30 minutes is fine. An hour is probably fine. So most people are checking for mail so often, the servers are overwhelmed, and so your tablet is saying the password was rejected when the real answer came back was, I didn't get a chance to check your password yet, and hang on a minute. And so,
oh, yeah. I really hate those red herring error messages.
The
only thing worse than that is, oh, it could be this or that or this other thing. It's like, no, tell me what actually happened. Don't tell me, server not found when it's really connection refused. I mean, come on.
Yeah, right.
And for average, the average user is not going to know.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Steve.
So the average user isn't going to understand what any of those messages mean. In fact, I had one this week. The internet's broken. And
that I would believe with my service.
What it turned out to be was she spelled a domain wrong in an email. And so the person didn't get her email. And in her mind, the internet's broken because I sent an email and they didn't get it.
Yes, the internet is broken.
Oh, my goodness. Well, actually, in a recent Security Now podcast, they did talk specifically about the googlemail.com domain. That they are going to use server name indication on that so that they can reduce their maintenance of the certificates. So what that is we're used to having several websites hosted on a particular computer, and they all share a common IP address, and how they distinguish themselves is there's a host header in the HTTP request that says, oh, I want soundbites.org. Maybe you're sharing that with, hundreds of other sites, but because that host header is there, it identifies that's what you wanted.
Right.
Now, it's a little different in the SSL TLS case because that's a layer below. You've already negotiated that secure connection before you can say, oh, I wanted sound.org.
Right.
The problem there is, well, it's catch-22. How do you tell it to use the same IP address and yet present the correct certificate to say, oh, I'm really soundbites.org? So that's where server name indication comes in. It says, I'm not sure what I want to connect to. Could you please give me the certificate for soundbites.org? Then it'll proceed normally. Now, the thing is, that specific domain name is going either has or is going to shortly start using server name indication. Maybe that's why this guy is getting a certificate error, because his software does not know how to negotiate that connection properly, and therefore he's getting a certificate that doesn't match what he's trying to connect to.
Right, and that was Steve's suggestion earlier. He's trying to connect to googlemail.com, which is likely redirecting to gmail.com and presenting a certificate that Thunderbird thinks is wrong because it's not googlemail.com.
Oh, heck yes.
Yeah.
I don't know where they ever started using that. I've never seen that before.
Oh, yeah,
personally.
It used to be way back in the old days.
2004, 2005.
Yeah, it was googlemail.com. And then when they officially decided it was really Gmail, they, of course, took that domain out as well, and then now everything is gmail.com.
Oh, back
I know
in the olden days.
I know people
oh my
that.
Goodness.
Yeah. I know people that use me.com so that their address is short. See, I hate typing rochester.rr.com, and
right.
even frontiernet.net is kind of long, and they've shortened it for most of their customers to frontier.com. But I like me.com. It can't get much shorter than that.
Right.
My goodness, no, it can't. Yeah, oh well, same sort of thing. I have domain name, my surname, family.org.
Yeah.
Somebody took my surname.com, net, and org, some guy in Germany.
Yep.
That was so long. Finally, when they started offering .us for reasonable money,
yeah,
I got my surname.us. So it's like, hey, oh, so much less typing, for heaven's sake.
Yeah, right, exactly. Exactly. All right.
Thank you, sirs.
Thank you, Joe. Have fun.
And ma'am. Tom?
I remember years ago, I was at a customer site, and we were talking about custom domains, and I looked up StephenRay.com, and it was owned by somebody. Oh, it's open. No, I spelled my name wrong. and it was a big parking site came up and said, this domain for sale. Yeah, still, this domain for sale. And I said, all right, no, I don't want to pay for that. Because there's an actor that uses the same spelling.
Right.
So these cyber squatters will register domain names, hoping that someone will come along and pay them a lot of money for the name. In my personal email at home that night, there was an email from the domain parker saying, you want to buy this domain? I was at a company site, had nothing to do with me, so they must have just done, and that was freaky, they must have done some scan for any Stephen Rays and found email addresses. Oh, somebody looked for it, let's go
send a million of these out, because
yep.
They're free, what the heck?
Yep.
Yeah, no, I get it. It's
let me see how much.
That's why I took out AmeliaRose.com for my daughter when she was born. I thought, well...
So you got to pick a name that isn't used yet.
Yeah. Well, I still get to this day some woman who wants to buy AmeliaRose.com from my daughter. She's gone up considerably from the ridiculously low amount she was originally offering to something that's almost sort of acceptable. I figure it's kind of like stock now. I'll just leave it there. And then when my daughter is old enough that she really needs the money someday, she'll call the lady up and say, well, there's got to be at least one comma in that number somewhere.
Yeah. See, it's getting harder to pick names because it's you don't want to use the name of someone you know unless you're naming them in their honor. And people are waiting longer to have kids, so you know more people. In fact, I had a fight with my wife when she was pregnant with our son. That Nick, she just liked Nick as a good name.
Great name,
but I know
terrific name.
I know, yeah, I know a Nick. I don't want to name my son Nick either. Well, and it wasn't going to be Nicholas, or it was going to be Nick.
Right.
A lot of people are naming their kids nicknames now.
Yeah,
and then so we decided on Matthew. But I have a cousin Matt. So I didn't want to use Matt, so we always use Matthew.
Right.
But apparently
my wife was like that when we went for names for my daughter. Well, my father and I knew it was going to be a girl from the moment my wife got pregnant. We just knew. So I never cared what she wanted to name a boy because it wasn't going to be a boy. But she went on forever for both boy and girl names. No, I know somebody like that. I knew somebody in high school who had that name. I don't like them, blah, 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 blah. So Amelia Rose, we came to fairly quickly. That was kind of nice. Luckily, it was a girl. My father and I were correct because the only guy's name we could actually agree on was Guido. So, in fact, we were
Father
fairly,
Guido Sarducci.
But that's not somebody we know that my wife knew personally.
And then there was Guido the Killer Pimp in Risky Business.
Sure, but again,
played by Joe Pantoliano.
Personally. So that's what counted there. So,
and so now, in addition to all the names of people you might already know, you have to find a domain name that's open.
Well, I don't think there's a lot of Guido domain names that are taken, frankly. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and I will, while my daughter ponders on how lucky she was that she was born a girl. Back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Linda Wildman, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 39 minutes after the hour, Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Linda Wildman.
And at 42 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And we're back. We had an interesting discussion about IMAP versus POP3. Most people don't care. But luckily, the big companies nowadays, like Google, are all doing IMAP anyway. So.
Yeah, Roadrunner is only the major local provider that doesn't support IMAP.
Right.
So you can log into your Roadrunner webmail, forward everything to a Gmail account, and let Gmail IMAP run and use the Gmail spam filtering too. And Frontier just switched over to using Yahoo Mail for their servers, and we've run into people having trouble getting connected through that, especially on the iPad, trying to tell it it's a standard IMAP service. So one of the tricks we found is that if you on your iPad, if you're setting up your Frontier Mail account, tell it it's a Yahoo account. And then just put in your Frontier email address, and that sets itself all up with Yahoo IMAP. Really
and makes
nice.
It work nice. Yep. Excellent. All right, our next caller is Lee from Greece, New York. Welcome, Lee. What's up?
Hi, guys. Enjoy your show.
Thank you.
I turned on my computer yesterday, and I got a message, blue screen of death sort of thing, invalid process, attach, attempt. I got on the web on my tablet, and it said something about knowledge base item 882243. I went there, but I assume because it was Android, I couldn't download whatever it was trying to say I needed to fix.
Right. Generally speaking, when you get a knowledge base thing, it's Microsoft's own knowledge base.
Right.
What was that number again?
882243.
882242. Is that enough?
Wait a minute.
887742.
Ah.
Okay. Oh well.
That's completely different than I heard too.
Yeah.
That's why I'm not finding anything.
Yeah, that's exactly it. There you go.
That's a stop error code, invalid process attempt.
Yeah, that's what he says it was.
Yep.
Basically.
But yeah, the answer to your question is yes. You're on Android, so you can't download the Windows patch.
Right. Right.
You can only do that actually from a Windows. Well, actually, you should be able to download it.
Well, the problem is...
It wants a validation. You know, God forbid you just be able to download something. Golly net, I hate these people. Yes, the basic thing is they need you to validate your Windows XP system because they assume from the get-go that you are a thief.
Yeah.
And so because you're a thief, a dirty, lousy, no good, stinking thief,
yeah.
They want to validate your Windows system before they will let you fix the Windows system that they can't validate because it's broken.
Right. So is this something I can bring to a computer store, a repair shop?
Theoretically,
yes. If you have a friend with Windows, you can go to their machine, download this file. No, but you can't even boot your computer, can you?
So
you
well,
can,
what you, happens is I go install. Through the boot process, and then after I've entered my password, within a few minutes of it sitting there staring at me, it then switches to the blue screen of death.
Right. Try doing a safe boot, and that lets you log into the administrator account and not your account.
Right.
And if you do safe boot with networking, you should be able to get to the Microsoft Knowledge Base to download that file.
Now, where do I see that when I start?
When you first start to boot, hold down, keep pressing the F8 key.
F8. Okay.
It's after the power on tone, but before the Windows logo comes up.
Okay. I have two other questions, gentlemen, if I may.
Quickly.
Mobile processors. What do you recommend for laptops?
Well, not a Centrino.
Not a Centrino.
Right.
Well, that's just because that's what Nick's using now, and it's having trouble keeping
well,
up.
Well, be fair. I'm doing an amazing amount of junk, and I've only got 2 gig of RAM, so I get it. But I don't... Are you talking about a Windows laptop or...
Yes, Windows laptop.
Yeah.
The mobile chips are cheaper, and so they keep the prices down, but they're less powerful, so you don't get as capable a laptop.
Yeah.
So it really depends on what you're going to do with it.
Well, I do Windows, Excel, and the other products primarily, and my Quicken when I've when I sit down to the computer. I don't, about the biggest game I play is Free Cell. But I want to be able to do video, I want to be able to buy a Blu-ray player and plug it in.
You just eliminated a mobile processor.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you really kind of did.
And even with Excel, the calculations that you can put in Excel...
Well, you can do everything you want with a mobile processor. It just takes longer.
Yeah.
The big difference is when you want to do high-end video and anything else.
Even sometimes just playing video, going to YouTube and playing a video,
right. You
need a decent enough processor and a GPU, a video processor.
A decent enough video card as well.
Yeah.
So, it's if what you want to do is video, often enough we tell people, if what you want to do is, like, for example, edit video.
I've just watched. I don't edit.
Oh, well, if you're just going to watch video, then check out laptops that have high-end graphics cards in them.
Okay.
And generally, they will come with a fairly decent.
But if you're doing Blu-ray, that takes quite a bit of CPU usage to decode the Blu-ray encryption.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So you need something with a Blu-ray player built in.
Okay.
Which a lot of PCs do now anyway.
Right.
Which is silly because you can't see the Blu-ray quality on a 12-inch screen.
Right.
Or even anything below like a 45-inch screen.
Right.
Yeah, I assume that if it was capable of handling Blu-ray, it might have an HDMI output so that I can hook it into my TV.
Usually that will not work because it's copy protected. You need a specific HDMI that has HDCP, high definition copy protection.
Oh wow!
If you try to connect, because that happens now with Macs and iPads that we run into a lot, you try to plug into your HDMI connection and use your copy protected content, it won't play because you don't have the copy protection stuff built into your television and built into your... So you have to use the VGA analog hole.
Right. And basically, again, that's because the assumption is that we are all thieves.
Even though I buy a movie, high-def movie, legally, I try to run it on my laptop or try to run it on my iPad, I get the copy protection errors trying to use HDMI... because of the playback device, the cables, and the display device all have to have the right and the same copy protection protocols built in.
Can I ask you one more quick question?
Very fast.
Cloud backups do any of the companies stand out better than the others?
Carbonite and CrashPlan are probably among the better ones.
You both spoke at the same time.
Carbonite and CrashPlan.
Carbonite,
are probably the two of the bigger, well-known ones.
CrashPlan, huh?
There was an episode of Security Now a few months ago where he went over the cloud backup services from an encryption standpoint. You want to make sure the data is encrypted at your end before it leaves your computer.
Okay.
And Carbonite is it does that as well. So something like Dropbox is very common for synchronizing files between your computers, and also as a cloud backup because everything's in the cloud. But that is encrypted at their end, and they can decrypt it if they get subpoenaed or if anyone happens to want to.
Right. Thank you for your time, gentlemen.
Sure. All right. Thanks.
Bye.
It's a cloud backup. Brilliant idea. But, you know, again, when the rubber meets the road, you have to worry about whether or not you have anything that somebody else shouldn't get their hands on. So, for example, if you keep your finances or your credit card information, you'll want to probably encrypt that on your machine before you back it up. All right, our next caller, Tom from Greece. Welcome, Tom. What's up?
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I wanted to know if Dr. Webb, is that a legit program? Is it safe to use?
Generally, yes. It got kind of a bad reputation because they are in Russia. And
oh,
so,
they're in Russia.
Right. So the assumption is that they're dirty commies.
Right.
but yeah, it is a legitimate, well-known antivirus and security company.
Okay, because I used it, and I wanted to make sure that they didn't get my information.
Well, as with any of these, if you bought it from them, then of course they got some of your information because you gave it to them. But if you're using the free version, then they are considered a reputable company, so I wouldn't necessarily worry that they are in some way stealing stuff off your hard drive.
All right, thank you.
Absolutely.
And they also have a Mac version. They were one of the companies that broke one of the first big Mac Trojan Horse releases. And for the first day or so, no one believed them because, oh, they're a Russian company. They probably wrote it. And so, no, they're a legitimate company. Well, and what's interesting is Kaspersky has a pretty big name. He's also Russian. But Sophos, which sounds kind of Greek, is actually British.
Right.
And they're a well-known, reputable company, too.
Right.
So just because there's the whole rest of the world out there, you know, it shouldn't be so U.S.-centric here.
Right. Our next caller, Tim, from Webster, New York. Welcome, Tim. What's up?
Yeah, hi, guys. Just real quick question for you. When I log in to, say, Yahoo, and I'm typing my username in, there's been a couple occasions where I accidentally didn't tab over down to the password before I typed in my password. So now in the drop-down menu, my password will show up behind my username, which is kind of frustrating, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And I was just wondering if there's anything that I can do about that to get that off of there, so in case anyone else can't see it.
What browser are you using?
Mozilla most of the time, Firefox.
And it kind of goes back to one of our earlier callers. You have to clear your autofill history,
okay,
whatever that browser calls it.
Right. Basically, every browser, if you're using a newer version, when you go to clear out stuff, you get to choose what to clear out. Now, the one thing you should select is the autofill.
Okay. Oh, under tools?
Probably.
Okay.
I'm using Chrome at the moment, so I can't tell you directly. But
okay.
If you're using Firefox, there is a way to do it. And make sure that the thing you clear out is just the autofill.
Autofill, okay. Yeah.
That should do it.
Okay, thanks for your time, guys.
Sure.
Okay, bye-bye.
That will also clear out all the other stuff you want it to remember.
Right, but the problem is you can't play. What you might try, before you do that, hold on, Tim, before you do that. One of the things you might try is actually just going down to it, arrow down to it, and hit the delete key.
Or maybe right-click on it and try. There might be a forget this or something.
Yeah. Can't hurt to try. I know one of them does that, and I don't remember.
We see that in email programs. In fact, and it goes back to the customer I was talking about earlier. Typed in the wrong email address. The email program is conveniently remembering any address you type in for you.
Yep.
Including the wrong addresses.
Yep. Well, all right. That apparently brings us to the end of another thrilling, if not actually exciting, week of Soundbites. I want to thank everyone who called in. To those of you who did not call in, I have no idea why you didn't. You should. It's way more fun than just sitting around by yourself on a Saturday afternoon. We are done for another week, but fear not. The hole we leave in your life will be plugged immediately by George, who is coming in to play the best German music you will hear all week. So don't touch that dial. And we will be back next week with Dave Enright, probably, and Steve Ray. I want to thank Linda Wildman, who did just way better job than Dave ever did. No, I won't say that, because he's not listening. So there's no point in insulting him if he's not paying attention. We'll be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.